go.
Put this in your pocket.
We're ready.
Hey, everyone.
I mean, I really, you know, man, with this guy.
But he agreed to make us more wise. And we thank him very much for taking his time out and coming lecturing us.
First of all, I want to thank you for inviting me over. And good afternoon, everyone. And before I forget, Happy New Year to everyone. I'm not so sure it's going to be your best lecture of the year, but I'm very confident this will be your last lecture of the year. Confident of that. So what I was asked by Mike to do was to talk about APAP toxicity. And as we know it as acetaminophen or Tylenol, and the APAP you'll see comes from N-acetylparaminophenol. Now, there is going to be some biochemistry on here, and there's going to be some pathophysiology. But like I tell our guys downstairs and ladies downstairs, we have to have a basic understanding about why things happen the way they do in a person's body when somebody gets sick or diseased. But before I talk about actual APAP toxicity in itself, so, you know, I try and tell, you know, first the pants, and then you put on your shoes. Meaning to say is that when someone comes in and they're unstable, no matter what the toxidrome is going to be, no matter what the overdose is going to be, we have to take care of the ABCs, the airway, breathing, and circulation. And what I try and tell our people, ABCs doesn't stand for airway, breathing, and chest tube. It stands for airway, breathing, and taking care of the circulation. So as always, we always want to stabilize the unstable or the metastable patients first before we think about specific things that we need to do. If the person, now most of the time, just going to Tylenol for a second, a lot of times these patients will come in asymptomatic if it's just plain Tylenol alone. That's why you're going to find out we always have to send a level. When I talk about the different stages of Tylenol intoxication, you're going to see the first stage one, they're basically asymptomatic. There may be a little bit of GI distress, but basically they're asymptomatic. But if it's not taken care of later on down the line, as we'll find out, it could kill you. So that's why for any type of overdose or any type of situation where we think there's a suggestion of some Tylenol toxicity or APAP toxicity, we're going to send a level. Now again, so here are the usual suspects. And what we do is when somebody comes in generally who, by history or by suggestion, that there's a toxin on board, well, there are only certain medications and certain things that we have antidotes for downstairs. So like, for example, if somebody came out with a straight-out benzodiazepine overdose, which we rarely see, but we're concerned about benzodiazepine toxicity, the antidote for that is going to be, flumazepil or rimazicon. That's right. If I had somebody who had a organophosphate intoxication, you know, where they have to sludge, so, you know, the lacrimation, salivation, and so on, the organophosphate, because of increased muscarinic and nicotinic stuff going on, the antidote for that's going to be what? Atropine and Tupam, that's right. Atropine especially because I want to take care of the muscarinic effects. Those are the killer bees, what we call the killer bees, the bradycardia, the bronchorrhea, and the bronchospasm. If I have somebody who comes in with an ethylene glycol intoxication, the antidote for that is going to be, which was? Well, in the old days we used, in fact, I gave alcohol a long time ago before we had the antidote here, which is antazole that you can use. If I have somebody who has digitalis intoxication, it's going to be digibine, that's right. And there are probably some others, you know. If I have somebody who I'm concerned who has a tricyclic overdose, I'm going to give what? I'm going to give bicarb, especially if I see widening of the QRS complex, or I see a QTC, enlarged QTC interval, or if I see something that looks like a Brugada syndrome on the patient, these things that will suggest to me that maybe the person needs bicarb. And just one other, if I had a straight-out anticholinergic intoxication, Benadryl, an anticholinergic intoxication, straight, not TCA, but anticholinergic, the medication of choice in that situation would be Physostigmine or antillyrium. So there are only certain things, but Tylenol is one of those things where we have a medication to take care of. and we're going to find out it's NAC, what we call NAC, or N-acetylcysteine. That's what we're going to use as an antidote when we have somebody who we suggest has APAP toxicity or Tylenol toxicity. Now, you can see where it gets its name. So here's the chemical name, N-acetylparaminophenol, and that's how we get acetaminophen, right? Acetaminophen, look at that, unbelievable. So now you will all remember what the chemical name is. And if you forget the chemical name, you say, gee, if I looked at the structure over here, and here's acetaminophen, N-acetyl, it's in the para group, paramino, and here's the phenol over here. So this is acetaminophen, which is almost structurally related to salicylic acid, okay? Here's a phenol, but I got a carboxyl group over there. And then if I make this an acetyl group instead of a phenol group over here, here's just your typical aspirin. So you can see how related these are, how Tylenol is related to just plain old salicylic acid and acetylsalicylic acid, ASA. Now, before I go on, you guys have to do me a favor, because this is probably one of the most important things I'm here for. You know, we will admit patients sometimes who they got some right upper quadrant pain, and we don't think that it's cholecystitis, and their liver function tests are elevated, and either by CAT scan or by ultrasound, there's nothing going on in the gallbladder. And so, of course, we're thinking, well, there's only two things that could be going on. It's either hepatitis, or it has a gallbladder, or since it's not gallbladder, it's hepatitis for whatever reason. And very few people will remember to think about, has there been a Tylenol ingestion? Has there been super therapeutic doses? Have there been higher doses than normal? Which may present itself later on down the line, 24, 36 hours, with some elevated liver function tests and some right upper quadrant pain. So when you doctors are in the emergency room, working in the emergency room, or you're SMRing and we have to give a case because it's pain and you're unable to tolerate PO medication, we need to make sure that there's no Tylenol on board, because treatments are going to change. Those people need to be NAC. We're going to go through some of the suggestions about when we think about giving NAC based upon liver function tests and based upon the Tylenol level. The same thing goes for aspirin. You know, we get these old people who come in. My mother's good for these. You know, she'll take some aspirin off the refrigerator and pop them like they're sensens in their mouth, you know, like they're jujubes, and she'll take them. God watches over her that she's fine. And we get a lot of the elderly people come in. They could just have a little bit of change in mental status, a little bit of confusion, or they have a temperature now, and they're hyperventilating, and it's septic. They love sepsis. Everybody loves sepsis. Everybody's septic in the emergency room. And it's septic, septic, septic. And you may have to treat for septic, but you got to keep in mind, again, what medications people are taking. Because I know that there are times in the emergency room, or even especially with the Tylenols, that there's probably people who come in with some subacute Tylenol intoxication. And they're probably fine, because most people who have Tylenol intoxication or Tylenol toxicity are going to do well. But I know, being in Bronx and being in this place, that we've sent people home with Tylenol toxicity. But it's just been mild, and they just do fine. I know we send people home with serotonin syndromes, because they're a little bit hypomanic, and they got a little bit of GI stress, and, you know, everything's fine. We don't know what's going on. We send them home, and they're probably fine, because most serotonin syndrome does fine. But if you ask, that's why history, and we talk about it in medical school, and you talk about it around, the most important thing in this whole job is communication, is taking a history. Because usually down the line, the patient's going to tell you exactly what's wrong with them, or give you a lead. So again, I just want to impress the fact is that ask when you got elevated liver function tests, don't know what's going on, cover the Tylenol basis. Now, it was first used in the U.S. in 1950. We'll do a little bit of house cleaning over here. There's over 100,000 cases reported to the U.S. Poison Control Centers each year. Now, again, that's probably lowballing it. We should call up only for epidemiological reasons to call up poison control so people can keep records. But a good ED attending downstairs should know how to take care of a Tylenol intoxication. So this is probably an underreported number, just knowing what's going on at Jacoby. There are more admissions for Tylenol toxicity than any other common pharmaceutical agent. And in the U.S., It is the most common cause of acute hepatic failure. And it's probably the second most common cause for people who need a liver transplant. So it could be a dangerous substance. Though only a few people go into that area of hepatotoxicity and leading a liver transplant. It's probably less than 5% of people who are not treated. So, why does it work? Well, what does it do? It's an analgesic. It's an antipyretic. It's a weak peripheral anti-inflammatory. So, does anybody have any clue about how Tylenol works or what we think how acetaminophen works? That's okay. That's what I'm here for. You've heard of COX, right? COX 1, COX 2, COX 3. Well, there is some inhibition of COX 2, and it does. And again, COX 2, when we talk about the different COXes, you know, COX 1 is kind of the housekeeper of the body. You find it like in the GI, you find the renal, kind of keeps the body nice. It's just constitutively, you just keep on making COX. Whereas COX 2 gets made in response to inflammation. And that inflammation could be anything. It could be tumor necrosis factor. It could be an interleukin. It could be platelet growth-derived factor. All different things. It could be endotoxin, where then again we have an increase in the making of the COX-2. Now, it's kind of an analog to COX-1, which is a COX-3, which probably has to do more centrally with creating fevers. So there is a certain amount of COX inhibition going on that makes the Tylenol work. That's why it decreases fever, and that's why it's a good anti-inflammatory agent, though it's a weak peripheral anti-inflammatory agent. That's why we like to give Motrin, which is probably better for inflammation than Tylenol is. But if the pain's not so bad, if we could get away with Tylenol, that's going to be fine. And you all know, again, just to review, because we're medical here, we know where it comes from. You know, we got the we have a lipase, we have the phospholipid outer coating, we have a lipase, arachidonic acid gets released. And then we have, at least when I was in medical school, you got two arms. One is for cyclooxygenase, of which we make prostaglandins, and the other one that we give aspirin for when people have heart attacks because it starts with a T, thromboxane. And then the other one is the lipoxygenase system of where all those leukotrienes get made. Okay? So, does COX inhibition? That's why we think it works. Now, the pharmacokinetics of APAP. Now, there's immediate release, and roughly in the body, it's going to peak in around 45 minutes. Now, again, it's around 45 minutes. It could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour, so on. We're very confident that most of it is absorbed in 4 or 5 hours. Now, if there's a lot of food in the stomach, if there's an acute overdose, if they took an anticholinergic, if there's anything that's going to decrease GI motility, well, then it may be a little bit more time, and that's always the fudge factor. But when you see our nomogram, the Rumac nodogram, that when we make a decision to treat a Tylenol intoxication or not, it's going to be based upon complete absorption in 4 hours, though it may take longer. The total protein binding is around 10 to 30%, and it does not change in the overdose. No matter how much you take, the binding is going to be anywhere from 10% to around a third. Now, first pass takes care of around 25% of the dose. So the GI, the gut, there's certain breakdown before it gets to the liver, around 25%. So now it gets absorbed. Now roughly, again, you know, use my percentages with a grain of salt. You know, do I say 90%? It could be anywhere 80, 95, something like that. But most of it is conjugated. Glucuronide and sulfaction takes care of most of the Tylenol. The breakdown of the Tylenol gets broken down, you pee it out, everybody's happy when you take those regular doses. And in regular doses, roughly around 10 to 15% is going to be oxidized by the P450 system. So you've seen these CYPs before. All right, there's roughly around, I guess, you know, this first number is like the family. I think there are five families. And those two, last two, the letter and the number is the isoform. And that's 2E1. Now, the reason why I say 2E1 is because there's a couple of substances which will induce the CYP2E1 to make it work faster. We'll induce enzymes. And we don't want any induction, because when we induce it, then we get the toxic result over here. So the question is, what are some of the other things that will cause CYP2E1 induction? And that's what I'm here for. All right, the two basic things that you worry about are alcohol, or any of the alcohols. Somebody could do that, they're going to take benzene or ketone, stuff like that, the alcohols. And another one is going to be INH. Now, this is not to say we're going to treat people differently when they have a history in the acute state, when they have, if they take an acute one-time dose of an overdose. In fact, it's not even recommended to do when you have a history of alcoholism. But we may think twice in situations when we have some super therapeutic levels of Tylenol, and based upon chronic increase Tylenol levels, not a one-shot deal, but multiple super therapeutic doses of Tylenol, we may think twice. There are some isolated cases of people getting liver toxicity when they took chronic Tylenol and INH. So those are the things that we just could get concerned about. So again, just to review, it's oxidized by the 2E1. There aren't any other stuff that goes on, all right, other than the alcohols and the INH. Now, there are a couple of other CYPs. Let me see. There's like 1A2 and 3A4, the big, but very, very minor. You know, the ones, I think the 3A4s take care of your phenobarb and rifampin and tegretols and the whole list of other medications. But basically, this is the big one over here, CYP2E1. When you have this results because you're overburdening. When I have a big-time overdose and I'm using up all these stores of the glucuronide and for sulfaction, we're going to get more of the oxidation by the CYP2E1. More oxidation causes this to occur. Now, it occurs normally, no problem, 5 to 15%. But we have enough glutathione to convert it into a non-toxic substance. But when we don't have too much of this going on and we override this, we lose a lot of the glutathione. This is going to be toxic to the cell. It's going to be toxic especially to the hepatocytes. And that's what we get concerned about. So, again, what we get concerned about is this stuff over here, the N-acetyl parabenzoquinoamine or something like that. Everybody knows it is NAPQI. Now, when we do have enough glutathione, you get non-toxic, you combine, you get cysteine and mercaptan conjugates and eliminate the urine and everything is fine. All right? When this level, when the glutathione level drops to less than 30% of what it normally is, then we start to get into trouble. And regular Tylenol doses will not drop your glutathione level that low. Any questions? Do we understand so far? So, we talked about the glucuronidation and sulfactions are exceeded. It's totally saturated. Just to review, we get an increase of NAPQI because of the induction, because of the CYP2E1. Glutathione is diminished. The NAPQI binds to the hepatocytes, acrylates the cell proteins, and then we will have cell death. We have apoptosis. We'll have secondary inflammation. We have peroxidation. We have a lot of badness going on. And that's what we get concerned about. Badness in the liver. This is going to be our treatment, which is NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine. So here's your N-acetyl, and this is the cysteine group over here. N-acetylcysteine, either IV or PO, is going to be the medication of choice when we think we have a Tylenol intoxication or Tylenol toxicity. Now, what does NAC do? It's great. It regenerates glutathione. It may enhance sulfate conjugation. It has anti-inflammatory properties. It's an antioxidant. It increases nitric oxide. and which has a vasodilatory effect. You know, nitrous oxide is all that vasodilation that you will get with phosphodiesterase inhibitors, and nitroglycerin does it too, where there's a lot of things that increase. Bradykinin will increase nitric oxide. There's a lot of things that do it, all right? Many, many more than, of course, I said. But these are all the nice, good things about NAC. So when we think about if we have to treat someone for Tylenol toxicity, everything else being okay, what we think about is we think about giving the patient some NAC. Now, what leads to hepatotoxicity? Now, my definition of hepatotoxicity is going to be an AST, which is greater than 1,000. So you may have a different one, but when I talk about hepatotoxicity, it's an AST greater than 1,000. And we look at AST more than ALT because the AST is more sensitive, not as specific, but it's more sensitive for liver problems. So in the emergency room, really, I'm really concerned about like negative predictive value. So I'm looking for increased sensitivity. I tell the ED doctors need to be sensitive. So I look for negative predictive values. ED, you doctors have to be sensitive, so we look for things with negative predictive value. So since the AST is more sensitive than the ALT, I'm going to look at AST. So any increased dosing, INCREAS, that's true. Excessive duration of excessive dosing, increase in CYP2E1, again, we talked about the alcohol, the person on INH. If there's any reason for decrease in GSH, anorexia nervosa, bulimia, you know, this Karen Carpenter syndrome's over here where they just kill themselves. And for any reason because of this, if we have decreased glucuronidation and sulfactions. Some of these we may not know. But these are some of the things which will contribute maybe to hepatotoxicity. Now, it's very rare to see it, the Tylenol affecting the other organs. Though, you can have some renal problems going on in around 25% of patients. And again, the more Tylenol you take, the more toxic you are, the more likely you're going to get into renal problems. Renal problems, again, because there's CYP2E1 that's also found in the kidney, too. So that's probably the reason why. But it may be prostaglandin-mediated. There may be some other reasons going on. But for some reason, around a quarter of the patients who have liver toxicity are going to have renal toxicity. Other areas are rarely, at this point, other areas are really important, really reported. If they're really sick, well, we're going to see other things going on that would suggest mitochondrial problem with mitochondrial function, like an anagap acidosis, elevations of lactate, and so on. So we have the stages. And this is where we see most of our patients. Most of the patients, stage one, easy. There's no hepatic injury. They took some medication. So what we do, I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling wonderful. Yeah, I want to kill myself. Yeah, I took some stuff, whatever. You know, usually like within the first up to 24 hours. But the more Tylenol you took, the faster things are maybe going to occur. There may be a subclinical rise in the AST. Still going to be hours before it happens, but maybe around 6 hours, 12 hours, you're going to start to get a bump. Again, based upon really how much Tylenol you've taken. And there may be some non-specific stuff, some nausea, some vomiting, some diarrhea, even some non-specific stuff. Don't know what's going on. That's why we need to take the Tylenol level. Now, if they're not treated, in stage 2, we get the onset of liver injury. Now, roughly, again, roughly, a day to 3 days. This is going to take to occur. But it may be earlier in the severely poisoned patient. There's going to be, right, it's going to look like hepatitis. I got right upper quadrant pain. It looks like infectious hepatitis. There's going to be a continued rise in the AST. And there could be a deterioration in the renal function. The creatinine may go up. However, the BUN may be normal. In fact, a lot of the ways we test and see how a person is doing, like once we start them on NAC and really bad, it's not really the AST and the ALT we're going to be looking for. We're going to be looking at those other things. Bilirubin, the glucose, the PTs, those other things, the creatinines. Those are going to give us an idea, like if they're really bad and they go into these other bad stages, how they're going to make out. So again, usually within the first 24 hours, give or take several hours, everything's fine. But they took a super therapeutic dose or they took an overdose of Tylenol. They have something that looks like hepatitis. Still not treated. Here's the time of maximal hepatotoxicity. So it's around 3-4 days, something like that. Things are getting worse. They may go into fulminant hepatic failure. Now, again, roughly only 7% of these patients may go into fulminant hepatic failure. And what I mean by fulminant hepatic failure is the AST and ALT now are, that looks like it's 10 to the 4th power. So it's like 10,000. So big time. And you're going to see some signs of fulminant hepatic failure. There may be encephalopathy. There may be coma. There may be hemorrhage going on because, you know, the PT is like through the roof. It's an area code, the PT and the INR. Okay? So that's the third stage. Now, some people will just, if the survivors are stage 3, will they get better? They recover. Hepatic regeneration is complete. There's no chronic hepatic dysfunction. And recovery occurs 5 to 7 days after the overdose. But it may take weeks. But we don't know which of those people are going to survive it and which of those people who are going to go into fulminant hepatic failure and die. We just don't know. That's why we need to treat. Any questions? All right. So, people really don't know. I took a bunch of pills. You don't know. Sometimes you have the bottle. You could work backwards. When did you get it and so on? But we don't know. That's why we do take a Tylenol level. But roughly, if you knew, we start to think about the situation when it's 7.5 grams in adult. This is just a single occurrence, a one-shot deal. Pills in the mouth, in the stomach, not multiple dosing. 150 milligrams per kilogram in the child, which we don't have to worry about here. If there's an unknown amount, then many times we don't know. It's an unknown amount. I took pills. Yeah, maybe it was Tylenol. Eh, I don't know what it was. I just took the pills. Now, we have to be very confident about the time they took this medication. And we always, always are very conservative. So if the person won't give us a time, we have to be concerned about when's the last time we are very confident this person was seen okay without taking a medication. Because that's the time we have to go to. So if a person came home from work, you know, if we're very confident the person have access to Tylenol, and the last time the person was seen at 2 o'clock, and they present at 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, we have to be very confident through history, through repeated questioning to the patient, through talking with the family, get a very confident time of where the medication was taken. And then we look at the nomogram. The nomogram, which I'm going to show you in a second, fails about 1 to 3% of the time. But I'm telling you, it's so sensitive that the reason of the failures are probably not because of the nomogram itself. It's because of the estimation of the times that people were wrong about the time that the Tylenol was taken. Because that nomogram that we use is very, 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 very sensitive as far as starting treatment. So again, if we don't know what's going on, we don't know the time, don't know what's going on. And again, this is the acute ingestion. This is within 24, and I'll just say, this is within 24 hours. Because the rules are going to change if the ingestion occurred, if we think the ingestion occurred after 24 hours. So here's the acute ingestion. And here's the RUMAC Matthew nomogram. Now you can see it starts off at 4 hours. We don't care about the first couple of hours. Because we, in reality, we have 8 hours to treat. We should treat within the first 8 hours. We have some good results after 8 hours, between 8 and 24 hours. But we got 8 hours to treat the patient. So if a person comes in, let's say, for example, now we may do an initial Tylenol level. And when the person comes in and we get the usual gang, we get EKGs and we get all the blood work, we pull a Tylenol level. When they come in or something like that. Now, if the Tylenol level, and we're confident that this is not something that happened 3 days ago. I saw her, she came in the room, she changed some pills. If we do a Tylenol level and the Tylenol level is less than 10, that's the end of it. I don't even have to do a 4-hour level. But if you get a positive Tylenol level somewhere around 30, 40, something like that, within 0 to 4 hours, then I need to take the 4-hour level. Now, again, you can fight yourself. There's a little alcohol, there's a little tricyclic on board. They got to go 4.5 hours. Remember, you got a lot of time. You got a whole lot of time to do this in because you got 8 hours to get the NAC on board, either IV or PO. But as a rule, we will do the 4-hour level. So here's our nomogram. It looks like it's on a logarithmic scale over here. So I see over here that in 4 hours, if the level is less than 150, I'm safe. If they're looking well, you're going to psych in 2 more hours because in the emergency room, I got to keep patients in the emergency room for 6 hours because I get one person crapped out a long time ago when you guys were frozen in meiosis for all I know. Who knows when the hell it happened, okay? So now I got to keep them there for 6 hours. Even though if they're dancing around saying, I'm fine, let me go to psych, I'm crazy, I still got to keep them for 2 more hours. So you guys know. But I just follow the normogram. It's more really like half-life. Still, the elimination half-life is around 2 to 3 hours. You really see that it's 4-hour intervals because what happens is at 4 hours, it's going to be 150. If I go to 8 hours over here, it's roughly 75 and so on and so forth. So if I have somebody who comes in and I am very, very, very confident, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the person took Tylenol 8 hours ago, 8 hours from the time I took the blood, and the level is 90, I got to treat. If they took it 12 hours, well, let's go 16, for example. We'll go 16 because everything. So if I do 16 and 16 over here is somewhere around, I don't know, I'm up over here. It's like, let's say it was around 20, 30, something like that. As it goes by half-life. I have to treat. I just let the normogram tell me what to do. Again, only you could see. It only goes up to 24 hours. That's it. After that, I got to think about another strategy to use. But this is what I use for 24 hours. If I'm below this line, there is no hepatotoxicity. Like I say, this fails 1 to 3%, but they think the failure is not in the normogram. The failure is in us because we were fooled or bamboozled. We didn't get the right history or whatever. Here between 150 and 200, there's possible hepatotoxicity. In fact, I think in England or in Europe, they still use the 200. But in the U.S., we bring it down to 150 because we like to spend money. So we go down to 150. And here is probable hepatotoxicity. And the higher the Tylenol level, the more likely you're going to get hepatotoxic. So that's what we'll do. We get the 4-hour level, at least a 4-hour level. It may be a 6-hour level, it may be an 8-hour level, it may be a 12-hour level, based upon the presentation of the patient. But that's where we make the decision. Again, for the one-shot deal.
Does that change for paracetamol?
No. No. Not that I know of. Next. So this is what we give. We give N-acetylcysteine or NAC. So the treatment. So we get somebody, or this could be any overdose. Now I'm just going to talk about generically for a second, where we think somebody took an overdose. Now every attending is different as far as giving charcoal or not. I'm not a big charcoal giver because I think the person has to be really sick. Oh, I took 3 Motrins. Yeah, all right, fine. I let them be. Vital signs are stable. Everything looks good. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong. I'm not saying I'm right. But let it slide. But thank God, knock wood, I've never been burnt yet. Okay? Now, some people will give, when you read about the data about activated charcoal, it's usually recommended you give in the first couple of hours. But you can make a point to say, Dr. Corsiari, not for nothing, but if you say Tylenol is up to 4 hours before it gets absorbed, then shouldn't I give the charcoal? And I can't say no to that. I would have to say, yeah, you know, you should give it. So maybe in this circumstance where we know that absorption won't take until, unless totally, that we believe in 4 hours, then it's probably going to be able to give the charcoal. So it is reasonable to give it within 4 hours. There is no evidence that would suggest that if I give charcoal first, that it's going to interfere with the NAC interaction. It's not really clinically significant. But if I think repeated AC dosing is needed, like, for example, a good one is aminophylline. I think phenobarb is another one where if you call poison control, they will recommend repeated activated charcoal. Then probably we're better off to give the IV NAC rather than the PO NAC. All right? In fact, going back to this one, it may decrease the number of patients who are going to be below that line that we were talking about. The Rumack nomogram, the Rumack-Matthew nomogram. So it's probably a wise thing to give the activated charcoal, if you can. Now, do I have about... You know, they used to have Tarryton... I don't know if they have them anymore. They used to have Tarryton cigarettes. nobody remembers the Tarrytons way back when. And they had a charcoal filter because it would absorb all the badness going on. They had dual filter, had a regular filter and a charcoal filter. And it had a ring on the filter. So you smoked it because you thought you were protecting yourself because you had this, you were smoking through charcoal. So it would take everything. They activate the charcoal. They like throw oxygen in the charcoal. So all these, they put spaces between all the carbons over here in the charcoal. And I'll tell you this, that roughly, you know, 1 gram of charcoal, just 1 gram of charcoal, if I opened up all the surface area of the charcoal, 1 gram of charcoal would be something like 300 square meters or something like that. And if you have the super charcoal, it's like thousands of square meters in 1 gram. When you give, so just to make an analogy, if I give somebody around 30 grams of charcoal, if I spread all this out, it's about the size of, who knows, football, American football, that's the size of a football field. 30 grams of charcoal is the surface area of a football field. And what happens with charcoal will do is, and it works with Tylenol, it doesn't work with, you know, it doesn't work with lithium, it doesn't work with alcohol, it doesn't work with ion, it doesn't work with positively charged ions. It's because of covalent bonding and van der Waal forces, the stuff that you heard way back when, it will hold on to the substance. It will grab that substance. And that's what the activated charcoal is. Now, again, we probably have to give the big dose. It's usually around 60 grams we give, around 1 gram per kilogram of charcoal when we have somebody who has an unknown ingestion. For another topic, we'll talk about sometimes you could decrease that based upon if you knew for sure how much medication was given. But that will be a talk of another time. Now, we could give IV or PO. Either one will do, okay? Mostly, they are equivalent. The oral has fewer side effects. There may be some nausea, some vomiting. Maybe you get away with some Zofran. You give away some Reglan. And the oral costs less. But money-wise, IV is a shorter course. You know, there's maybe around 5 different protocols that you can use for giving NAC. You know, there's the PO protocol, which is around 48 hours, and you got the IV protocol, which is 21 hours, and there's all different protocols. So the IV protocol is roughly around half the time of the oral protocol. So if you want to get them in and out, you could go with IV. It's probably going to cost you a little bit more money, but you could use the IV protocol. In the old days, when people were throwing up, we used to give oral and we gave it IV. We don't have to do that anymore. It had an excellent safety profile. There was never any published bad outcomes. It's not generally recommended, but you could see if you were pushed to the wall and you had to do it, it's fine by me to give it, all right? But usually we have the IV NAC here anyway. So like I say, the 72-hour oral protocol that you can use, and we got a 20-hour IV protocol. Now, the protocols, you can always call up, you know, your friend is going to be poison control. And really, all you have to do is remember of, this could be APAP toxicity. And one thing you just got to remember, get your APAP level, get your AST and your ALT, get the time involved. You can let poison control decide, if you're upstairs or downstairs, let poison control decide as far as what steps you have to take. Because it may be start them on NAC, it may be good follow-up, it may be everything is fine. But if you have any question, use poison control as a resource. Because they'll help you through. You don't have to know all these protocols and what to do. Just know what information they're going to need. What are the medications they're on, when they took the medication. Again, a good history and good lab work, and how's the patient's clinical condition. Because poison control will help you make the determination if this person needs NAC or doesn't need NAC. Now, again, there's 3 other protocols over here. We don't have to go through them. But, again, for you to know the protocols or not, I mean, you come down the emergency room, look on the computer, we'll tell you what the protocols are. You know, this is going to be 140 milligrams per kilogram that they'll swig it down. And then they'll take 70 milligrams per kilogram every 4 hours for, like, 17 doses. This is, like, 150 milligrams over 1 hour, and then you get like 50 milligrams in the next 4 hours and 100 over that. They're all written down. Forget, don't worry about the doses right now because the doses could be found in not any toxicology book, but you can always call poison control. They'll tell you what it is. No problem. That's what they get paid to do. Now, you may want to give. We talked about POIV roughly the same, except for the little differences over here. But there may be specific indications for IV NAC. If you think there's hepatic failure going on, you're going to want to get IV. Cerebral edema, only because we want to have a more systemic effect of the IV NAC because of all the anti-inflammatory properties. So we want maybe more. So anything, cerebral edema, hepatic failure, if they can't tolerate PO, and another indication is going to be pregnancy again. Probably for the kid, but don't quote me on that. But you won't be concerned about pregnancy anyway because they'll be going to GYN unless they're very OBGYN, unless they're very sick. Now, whatabouts? So what about the acute overdose? So you come to me and say, Dr. Corsiari, not for nothing. But you know, the Tylenol level, I took a 4-hour Tylenol level, and the level is 100. And I know it's okay. It's under the normal gram. But he has alcohol on board, or he's a chronic alcoholic. And I have people who, how do you know he's a chronic alcoholic anyway? You know, what'd you do, cage on him? You did the cage? You knew what they're going with? Because you know all that GGTP and AST and ALT, all that's a lot. The likelihood ratios are baloney. Probably the most one with the best likelihood, positive likelihood ratio was carbohydrate deficient transferrin, which I don't think is going to be run in 3 hours over here. But the cage are very good. But to say, hey, Dr. Corsiari, but he's running alcohol. So don't worry. So the answer is don't worry about it. Now, again, you can always call poison control. But I'll tell you, they're more likely to say, you sure you took what time? You sure the time he took it? And this is what his level is? It's below the normogram? Don't worry. Look for something else. He's fine. No NAC. Now, we talked about these other things here. Again, there's been isolated cases. Just think about INH and think about these other medications which can affect. The phenobarbs, the rifampins, these are the 3A4 CYPs. This is the 2E1 that we talked about. There's been some isolated cases of people who've had problems below the normal gram, who are on INH, isolated, and I do mean isolated. So anything that you think is involved, phenobarb, rifampin, silantins, anything else, it's always okay to call the poison control and let them make the determination. All right? To be honest with you, I wouldn't, maybe. I don't know, but that's only me. I can't tell you that. Let poison control make the determination. APAP, less than 4 hours ago. Again, we wait 4 hours. We talked about, when did you take it? I took it 2 hours ago. Now, you can take a level now when they come in, and you see what the level is. If it's anything positive, we're going to have to take it 4 hours. We're going to take it 4 hours from the time they took the medication. If it's nothing, forget about it. Case closed, all over. Extended release. You know, you get 325 now, you get 325 later. Those extended release Tylenols. Well, it should still be all absorbed within 4 hours. So if you call a poison control and say, this was extended release, they're going to say, get the 4-hour level. The 4-hour level is fine. That's the end of it. So don't worry about extended release. Now, here are the problem ones. We don't have a time window. And it's greater than 24 hours. The ones that we probably let slip on by because we never asked for it. Okay? We get APAP and LFTs. Now, again, this is what you're going to expect from poison control. So if you have somebody who you suspected took Tylenol and we don't have a time window and it's been more than a day, we got to get the APAP and the LFTs. If the LFTs are elevated and we're confident they took Tylenol, we're going to have to treat if we don't have the time window. If the APAP is elevated, it's going to be prudent to treat. If the LFTs and the APAP are normal, it's going to be no treatment. So again, it's important to get the AST and to get the APAP levels. If those LFTs are elevated, now they may say treat or they may say not treat. That's why you have to call poison control, not to confuse you. Because you're going to find out when we have somebody took super therapeutic doses of, let's say, Tylenol, and we decide to treat, most people will stop the NAC once the Tylenol level is zero, once the APAP level is zero. And some people from poison control will allow some chump change LFTs, you know, 200, 300 LFTs. If they're looking fine, they go absolutely fine. If you got LFTs that are continuing to rise, they may say continue the NAC. So again, I have to leave it to the poison control. Knowing that, there's a lot of different ways to do these things. I don't want to be dogmatic over here and tell you this is the way it is. But I'm confident that if you have somebody who has an APAP level, no matter what time, if it's greater than 24 hours, they have an APAP level, you're going to treat. If there's no APAP level and increased LFTs, they're going to probably want to know what the LFTs are. So if it looks like they're hepatotoxic or close to hepatotoxic, they're probably going to say treat until those LFTs start to come down. Now, we get the repeated, the ones we miss also. Repeat, I'm taking Tylenol, I had some pain. And we never ask. And nobody asks about Tylenol. You know, you got blood. You take diabetic medication. You're on antihypertensives. You're on those, meanwhile, we don't care about aspirin or Tylenol. Those are over the counter. They don't count. Motrin, they don't count, right? We don't care about that stuff. If you don't write on the prescription, it's not my concern. Now, they'll usually be coming because they'll come and they're popping. And then they usually come in for a reason. Oh, I've been throwing up. I got pain over here. And these are the ones we miss. Oh, the LFTs are a little bit elevated. Oh, you're fine. Oh, we'll send we'll get follow-up office. Check his hepatitis. Or maybe this, he was drooling and walking like this. It's probably Wilson's disease. Did you know I knew what? You see those things around his eyes? No, those are his glasses. Those are not the food. All right. Now, if they're not symptomatic and they've ingested more than 4 grams or so, I've been popping Tylenol like it's going out of style, but they're asymptomatic. We just want to do the lab studies. We want to find out truly what the APAP level is and the LFTs are, because if they are elevated, they may need some NAC also. So again, the key, I know I'm repeating myself, is that whenever you hear about Tylenol, the acute ingestion, super therapeutic doses, chronic ingestions, APAP level, AST. Don't worry about the billies. Don't worry about all that stuff later on down the line. Just think about those things first, the liver function tests. So, if the AST is normal, the patient still may be at risk if the APAP is elevated. And I've talked to Bob Hoffman, who is the maven, who is the man at poison control. He's untouchable. He's the person that you would want to be when you're a physician, what he knows about toxicology. And he's a very nice guy. You send him an email, he'll send you an email back. But this guy is a maven. He's a maven. So as long as the APAP is elevated and they run the risk, they've taken chronic ingestions, super therapeutic ingestions, you treat until the APAP is down and the AST is normal, or at least close to normal. Now, again, if somebody comes and says, I don't know, they've been popping Tylenol. Who knows? They've been popping Tylenol. I don't know when, but they've been taking Tylenol for the last couple of days. So, when did you take your last time? Well, I took my last Tylenol around 4 hours ago, they say. Yeah, I took it before I came here. That was the Tylenol. Now, if they say they took their last Tylenol around 4 hours ago, and I got a level which is 15 or 20, I worry. Because that's just popping one Tylenol. That's a super therapeutic dose, so the person's been taking a lot of Tylenol. When's the last time you took Tylenol? Yeah, I took it around an hour ago, before I came. I was feeling, this arthritis is bothering me, man. You've been taking it? Yeah, I've been taking a lot of Tylenol. When's the last time you took it? Around an hour ago. You sure? Yeah. If the level's greater than 30, I worry. Okay? So again, whenever you think Tylenol, get the level. Now again, a lot of the stuff I have, you open up a textbook, you open up the internet, it's all here. I'm just here to entertain, make it more interesting. Now, if we got high-risk patients, and by high-risk patients, maybe the alcohol, maybe the INH patient, maybe the person who's anorexic and so on, those high-risk patients, I consider, worry, AST 2 times normal. If the AST is elevated and the APAP is greater than 10, if the APAP is higher than expected, like I say, I took it 4 hours. You took it 4 hours ago? Why is your level 20 if you took it 4 hours ago? Then I think we need NAC. If they're asymptomatic, the APAP is okay, it's less than expected, you got a normal AST, things like that, they're looking fine, then there may be some follow-up because they got moderate risk. Go home, we'll give you a telephone call. These people do not go to MSOU. Minimal risk for instructions. The APAP is less than 10 normal AST. Now, here we go. Now, are there any, that's really, how did I do? Boy, not bad. Now, I know I said, I guess the key is this. Think when you have somebody who looks like hepatitis, you think Tylenol. Now, you don't have to know what to do. All you got to do is get a good history, get the APAP level, get the liver function tests. And there are people in this great city who will help you make the decision as far as what to do when you're down the emergency room. If I got one of my lunatics downstairs who just wants to throw the case at you because he's unable to tolerate PO and he has to come in and the CAT scan is negative, say, hey, Joker. Joker. What about the Tylenol? Did you ask about Tylenol? You know, Dr. Corsi, and you say Dr. Corsi already. No, they don't do that. This is the way, I know that this is the way some of you physicians see the attendings over here. You see us come down and who's Catwoman? Who's the Riddler? Who's the Penguin over here? This is where you come down. It's like a cast of characters downstairs. All right? But I do want to say, but I know, and I want to end with this, and this is the day, look, their world, and I know when you're at the computer and you're doing those cases downstairs and you're, you know, you're putting your history and physicals in, that every now and then I'll see their world. I just can't take it anymore. I've decided, and this will come up, it looks like you're committing suicide. The office assistant can write your suicide note, help you write your suicide note. Tell us how to plan. You get your pills? You want to jump? How about some pastry? All right. I just want you to know, now I'm just going to be talking about myself personally. All right? This is coming from me. I do admire the work that you do here at Jacoby Hospital. All those patients you see, all those physical exams you do, all that work you need to do. I want you to know that it is well recognized, at least by myself, for the stuff you do and how you take care of the patients. We have our little rifts every now and then. Sometimes things get lost in the sauce. But you must understand, every time I see you, in the back of my mind, I know the care that you give to the patients. I know the concern that you have for them. So always remember that. And sometimes I'll be walking around. You know me. Sometimes I walk around like this, and I'm walking all over the place. Don't let my demeanor fool you as far as coming to me. If you've got a question, if you have a comment, if you have a concern, at nights, I'm always available for you. I'll help you out however way I can. I may not be able to help you out on everything, but I'll help you out however I can do it. So again, God bless you all. Have a happy and healthy new year, and we'll be seeing you down the road. Are there any questions?
Well, a patient come out from the ER one now.
Yeah.
And we get them upstairs, and we check their level, and the level is down, and they don't have liver toxicity.
Well,
they need to get the 17 doses that's supposed to get.
No, wait, hold it now. So they go, what was he admitted for? So Tylenol toxicity. So was this? So let me just say, was this an acute intoxication?
I assume yes.
All right. So acute intoxication. It doesn't make a difference what the Tylenol level is. Once I get that four-hour level, or that eight, once I make the decision on the nomogram, they buy into either a 20-hour IV or the 72-hour protocol. Now again, you still may want to look at liver function tests because, like, let's say you do a 20-hour IV protocol. Or the 72-hour PO protocol, and their liver function test is still elevated. Well, you may want to call up poison control just to make sure. They may ask you, well, is it trending down? There's only a couple of hundred now, you know, so on. They'll say, fine. But we only do one. That's all we need is that one. That one level, that's it. You don't have to check. Once you make the decision to treat, you treat. Now, if it's for the chronic stuff going on, the 72 hours, you know, that chronic stuff, then you may want to consider APAP levels every 24 hours to find out if it's truly going down. I mean, you could send, the decision to treat is going to be based upon that first one. We're not looking for trends. Again, if you want to send APAP levels, it's fine, but don't be, if the APAP level was 140 And then the next day, the APAP level is 30. Well, they're not going to tell you, stop, everything is fine. And they're probably going to tell you, unless they do a modification on the IVPO dose, they'll tell you to continue all the time. They'll tell you to continue through. But always, 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 like I say, you can call a poison control with all the data. They'll take it from there. Yes, sir.
People with chronic allergies, like chronic hepatitis, who happen to have a flare.
Yeah.
As paracetamol injection.
Right.
And during that flare, shortly after, their level is normal.
Right. That I can't tell you. I don't know what the answer is. That I can't tell you. I don't know. I know some. I just don't know everything. That one I don't know. And again, I would have to call up poison control for. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Do you use NAC for INH overdoses?
That's a good idea. But usually the INH people, if somebody comes with an INH overdose, there's only one thing that I've been taught. When somebody... And the INH overdose usually presents with what? When somebody took too much INH, what do? They're seizing like all over the place. And then what we do is we give paradoxine. I've never seen that, to give that. Now, unless I think, if you say, now again, if you do something and their liver function tests are elevated, maybe, but I've never seen in the literature. Now, you may be wrong, because just because I didn't see it doesn't mean anything. But I haven't seen INH overdose and NAC put together. Some people use NAC for chronic renal insufficiency when they want to do a CAT scan. Have you heard some of that before when you give the IV contrast, which some people buy into? All the doses are all different all over the place. If you want to do that, that's fine, because I think the meta-analysis probably favors giving NAC for people with chronic renal insufficiency to do a CAT scan. But that's your choice. I mean, NAC, Eucomist, was in the old days. It was like they give it for people who kind of bring up. It was like a bronchodilator in the old days. They gave. People wore mucomist, and they misted it in, and it's because it was like a mucolytic. That's how it got its name. Mucomist. Anything else? Okay?
Thank you.
Don't. Save your clapping when I give you a case.
Thank you so much.
Was that okay?
That was great. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Please, you can take any lecture you like.
Anytime.